Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
We've got 4 days of insanity. So by the time Monday rolls around, what happened on a Thursday feels like a year ago. As an example, does it really feel like it's been a year since Buffalo went into Jerry's house and humiliated the Clapper and Jera et al? It does. That seems like a lot longer than 4 days ago. Also, did a college team really lose a football game because a player scored a TD, pretended to be a dog, relieving himself, got flagged, and then they missed the extra point? Or was that just some kind of wacky dream I had after falling into a deep turkey coma? Nope. Luckily, that really did happen. Incredibly enough, I woke up and it was real. And it did happen and it was beautiful. I mean, shut it down. Let's go home, because it will never get better than this.
Here comes the pressure. Corral towards the goal line. It is caught. It is a touchdown. Elijah Moore. And they're an extra point away from tying the game. And penalty markers get thrown after the play.
Oh. Uh-oh. Big time extra point here.
A sportsman like contract foul. Eight on the offense. We'll have it on timeout.
So this is going to be an extended extra point try because of the excessive celebration penalty against Ole Miss. The pick is up. And it is no good!
Uh-oh! Is that what they're now calling a dog lifting his leg? Excessive celebration? Hope that was worth it. Although I'm guessing it wasn't. Not when it's a big reason why you lost to your biggest rival. I try and cut college players slack generally because they're not paid, most of them. But my man, if you're going to go with a celebration like that, in that situation, man, you better get your money's worth. You better go all in. Dog urination, and then, if you're going to get 15 yards, and it's going to cost your teammate a chance of winning, dog urination, and then you go next level with dog dumping. And you rip one of those little green bags out of your sock like you're cleaning up after the pooch. Doggy dog, man. Go all in. If you're going to take that penalty in that situation, you better get your money's worth. My man Elijah Moore crawling around in the end zone and relieving himself like a dog. It's going to be a long time before I unsee that. Good. I hope I never unsee that. Thank goodness the internet's in ink. That was wild. Only on Rival Week. Rivalry Week. I mean, there was so much that happened over the weekend that I'm not going to be able to get to all of it, but suffice to say, somehow Jason Garrett's weekend just got better when that didn't seem possible. Because even after that bad loss at home on national TV, they're still incredibly in first place in the NFC East. Because of the Miami Dolphins. Break up the Dolphins. Because that crew is breaking out plays like this.
Fourth and goal. Looks like they're bringing Sanders out. Fake. They're going to fake this thing. The Dolphins have players spread all over the field. Five to the left, four to the right. They run it. They throw a touchdown. Unbelievable.
Dolphins radio on the call. The punter taking the snap and flipping it to the kicker. Like, I'm not sure what's worse. Philadelphia getting hooked by the kicker, deking somebody at the line of scrimmage and getting free in the end zone, or the fact that Eagles coach Doug Peterson said they practiced facing trick plays all week long. Obviously, they didn't practice for that one. And it was pretty glorious. If I'm an Eagle fan and I saw that, I'd be looking for the biggest pile of horse crap imaginable for lunch. How did that happen to them? And while that was one of the worst things that happened to anybody on the field Sunday, that's still not nearly as bad as what happened to the Jets, who somehow managed to lose to the winless Bengals. Now check that. They didn't just lose, they got hammered 22-6. Cincy was marching to a pristine and flawless 0-16 season, and then the Jets just blew that whole thing up. I mean, there was a time when I would have been pissed that something like that happened. Pissed that a New York team ruined nearly a year's worth of hard work for a team that was working a dream season and on its way to running a table in reverse. Strangely, I'm not mad. In fact, I'm impressed. I'm not here to clown and kill the Jets. I'm here to hype the Jets. I mean, find me a more impressive feat than the Jets losing to both the Dolphins and the Bengals in the same season. And if the Jets manage to lose to two of the worst teams ever in the same season, what does that make the Jets? They just lost to two of the worst teams ever in the same season. So what does that make them? What's better than that? Nothing. Except for maybe this. And I hate to make everything about the Cowboys, but what does it say that the Jets beat the Cowboys, but the Jets lost to the Dolphins and the Bengals in the same season? Or that they beat the Giants and then lost to the Dolphins and the Bengals? Not exactly a ringing endorsement of the Giants either, right? But then again, everybody already knew that because they're living in the same world of suck that the Dolphins and the Bengals are. The Giants. The Giants are not good. In fact, the Giants are terrible. They just got thrashed by the Packers in their own house, which was their eighth straight loss. And the loudest cheers yesterday were chants of "Go Pack, go!" Go Pack, go! On the road. But if you're looking to come in here and take a run at Daniel Jones for three interceptions and clown him for being a turnover machine, head coach Pat Shurmur ain't having it. He says you've got that all wrong.
Yeah, well, the turnovers today were the interceptions, right? The first one was against two-man. You know, he just tried to fit it in. Today they weren't fumbles, right? And then the one he just overthrew. And then the last one there, he threw a nine ball to Slayton, you know, and I thought he was in a position to either make the catch. So, no, I mean, these were throws. These weren't fumbles.
Oh. Why didn't you say so? You see, ball security is still a major issue for this guy, but while he's still turning it over, apparently, according to his coach, he's turning it over in a less offensive way. Less offensive way. I mean, I guess what Shurmur is trying to get us to believe is that there are bad turnovers, and there are good turnovers, and these are good turnovers. Oh, okay. Just like there are good nicknames and bad nicknames, and Danny Dimes is one of the worst. Bro, save yourself the time and the money of trademarking that one. Believe me when I tell you, unless you learn to take care of the rock, no one anywhere is going to be making a single dime off your terrible nickname. And I forgot where we were exactly in that Daniel Jones loop, because there was the initial reaction that he was a horrible pick. Then he beat Tampa Bay, and all of a sudden he was Joe Montana, Brett Favre, and John Elway all rolled into one, and demanding apologies from the Daniel Jones critics. So now is the Daniel Dimes fan club going to apologize to the Daniel Jones critics for demanding they apologize in the first place? You follow me? And as long as apologies are being doled out, are Raider fans apologizing for telling everybody a few weeks back that they were back? Remember when they had that three-game winning streak and they were talking junk, not just about making the playoffs, but winning the AFC West? Remember that? Neither do I. Because after they beat Cincinnati to get to 6-4, when they were all talking all that noise, everything came apart. They got smashed by the Jets. Everything comes back to the Jets, right? 34-3. Then they got murdered by KC yesterday. Two critical games, and they lost them by a combined score of 74-12. And it gets worse. They were up 3-0 on the Jets, and then they gave up 34 straight to the Jets and 31 straight to KC. 65 unanswered points over two games. How's that grab you, Raider fan? Man, that is deplorable. So is the fact that Oakland's receivers had a total of 8 receiving yards in the first three quarters yesterday. November and December football is championship football, and the Raiders have disappeared altogether. So if any of you actually did apologize to the Raiders, feel free to go ahead and take it back. I know I am. And then there are the Chargers. Show me your lightning bolt! I mean, there are no words at this point. I mean, I'm paid to utter words, like I'm known for the words. I've got no words. They brought out the same script yesterday against Denver. Fall behind by a couple of TDs. Come roaring back in dramatic fashion. They manage to stay alive with plays like this on 4th and 11 from their own 24.
Snap. Here comes the extra rusher. Rivers throws left sideline. Mike Williams fell. Still able to get the ball. What a grab by Mike. Are you kidding me?
Chargers radio. Right, DJ? Are you kidding me? Hey, quick question. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Next time, do not make a shake. Don't grab a bar. Eat a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty. It's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And it goes wherever you go. To the game, to the gym, to the beach, anywhere at all. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, be sure to ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Unbelievable play. And then they get themselves in position to tie this game.
Badgley's kick is up, and it is through. We are tied at 20.
Hell yes. The Money Badger hits that. And with 14 seconds left, we're going to overtime. No, we're not. To quote that MMA ref, excuse me, my bad. Because Denver did this.
Locke's going to let this one fly. He's going deep for Sutton, and he's got him. And we got a flag, and that is the one thing you could not have. Somehow Casey Hayward is flagged.
Wow.
With 3 seconds left in the game, they throw a flag on Casey Hayward.
Number 26.
Boy, these officials have been something today. What a brutal call. That pass was nowhere near Cortland Sutton.
My man Matt Money Smith is furious. That is gutting, even for the Charger fans. I mean, I don't even know what to say. Like I said, there are no words. Even though we've seen this movie so many times before, it is still brutal every time the ending comes. Because each time it's new and it's different, but the pain is so familiar. Because only the Chargers could lose in that fashion. And they do it just about every single time they lose. About the only thing I can do to help you now is change the subject. Or maybe go to break. He is Jason Lockenfora. Jason, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, my friend?
How you doing, JLC?
I can't complain, buddy.
Good.
Can't complain.
All right, so let me ask you about Lamar Jackson, because you and I have talked about him and what he would mean to the Ravens ever since he was drafted last year. So just how big was that win for them yesterday over San Francisco in those elements?
Yeah, I think it was big. You know, they had been on this magic carpet ride, blowing people out by, you know, 30 points a week and basically having games decided at the half and the starters off the field in the third quarter, almost like the preseason. And that's not, you know, that's not the NFL. It's not going to be like a college or high school game. One-way traffic all the time. And they were destroying some really good teams. But again, that's you know, not usually how it works on a weekly basis up here. So to get sort of an old-school brawl, one where they weren't going to be playing with the lead the whole day, one where they weren't going to go away and hide, and to have an opponent who pushed them the way they did and, you know, has such a dominant defensive line and so is equipped in a lot of ways to do some things against the Ravens defensively that not all teams can. And then also, you know, to have a really smart offensive play caller, you know, string puller in Kyle Shanahan, who will keep tugging at certain weaknesses, who obviously had the outside run, outside zone run game going to a point where the Ravens really couldn't stop it. Yet Baltimore still found a way to win ugly. They managed the game. They were smart about the situations when they did have the ball in the second half, even though San Francisco dominated time of possession. And they played to set up their kicker, who's as good as any who's ever done it. So, yeah, I think it was a statement, a different sort of statement by the Ravens. And you know what? It was a great statement by the 49ers as well. And if those two teams were to meet again in February, I think that would be a heck of a ball game.
Jason Lockenfora, my guest. In fact, you've made my point that I was about to make. I think that even in defeat, San Francisco made a real statement themselves. So the 49ers, Jason, get to chase that game in Baltimore with one in New Orleans on Sunday. What are your early thoughts on that matchup?
You know, I still have this feeling, just sort of this sense that I think New Orleans is the best team in football. I thought that last year too, and obviously we'll never quite know how that Super Bowl would have played out because of the call that changed it all. But they're obviously a very good team. Offensively, they haven't hit on all cylinders like I thought. You still don't see them really pushing the ball downfield with explosive plays, and I think that's an element that tends to become so critical in the playoffs. It's that one big play here or there. That's going to be a heck of a football game. Two really physical football teams, two defensive lines that can get after it, two head coaches who are smart about offensive scheming and tactics, and putting people in positions to succeed as anybody in the game. And look, Baltimore going to Buffalo, that's not going to be all, you know, roses and cupcakes for them either. I think both these teams are going to feel some physical aftermath from that you know, battle that they threw down in the rain for 3 hours yesterday. And I wonder if it does take a little something out of them short term.
Jason Lockenfora joining us, JLC. So last night the Texans looked really impressive in handling New England. But let me jump ahead of the Patriots, because you reported yesterday that players and coaches in the Patriots locker room would be open to a reunion with Antonio Brown. When you see how that Patriot offense looked last night, and in particular how much trouble the receivers are having getting open and getting separation, how likely then is a reunion?
Well, it all comes down to, you know, to Robert Kraft, who hasn't been really open to it yet. But, you know, look, could Tom Brady or somebody try one last, you know, chance and politic a little bit, you know, say something to him? Could a Bill Belichick try to move the needle? It's clear they cannot stretch the football field, right? It's clear their limitations offensively. They understand it better than anybody, and we're past the trade deadline. And there's only so much you can do now to get better. And, you know, this might be a year where N'Keal Harry just never really gets his feet wet with all the time that he missed it, and you can't really count on him. You know, Philip Dorsett's a straight-line guy, but he's never really looked the part of a starting NFL wide receiver. You know, Josh Gordon isn't there anymore. I mean, there's not a lot of options. It's clear that 12 trusts two guys. He trusts the running back, James White, and he trusts Julian Edelman. It's kind of an adventure throwing to anybody else. And I know this, that the chemistry that he and AB had in a very short period of time in practice and in games was very real, and it was palpable to everybody in that building.
We're talking to Jason Lockenfora for a few more moments. GLC, let's jump ahead to the NFC East. Now, when you consider how the Cowboys looked on Thanksgiving, then how Philadelphia looked yesterday in losing to Miami, Jason, how bad is the NFC East right
it's
now?
Bad. The third, I almost feel like with the number that the AFC East has done on it, like the third place finisher in the AFC East should have to play the champion of the NFC East in a one game elimination for true control of that division. It's bad. I mean, when you have Washington and New York, who, let's face it, for most of the year have been utterly non competitive in your division, you're basically getting what should be a 4-win subsidy right then and there. And then the other quote-unquote best team in your division, and I'm putting that in air quotes, is a team like Philadelphia or Dallas, who've shown any given week they could go out and lose to the Jets or lose to the Dolphins and look pretty pathetic doing it. It's hard to get excited about any of those teams, you know? It's hard to project any of them and say, oh, yeah, that's a team that could roll off 3 wins in January. You know, and the wild cards of the NFC look pretty, like, let's just say it stays like it is, and it's Seattle and Minnesota, or let's say it's San Francisco and Green Bay, like, whatever, you know, that's going to be a tough task for Dallas or Philadelphia, or the third-place team in the AFC East, who I think really should win that division.
All right, so if you had to say right now, what are the odds that Jason Garrett is coaching the Cowboys next season, and if he's not, who might they be looking at as a possible replacement?
Well, unless they magically morph into what Jerry thinks they've been since training camp, which is one of the 3 to 5 best teams in the league with a legitimate chance to win a Super Bowl. You know, unless that is the path they go down, then I think they absolutely will be making a coaching change. And I think that die's been cast since last offseason. And I don't think it. I know it. I think Lincoln Riley would be the first name that they reach out to, or one of the first names they reach out to, somebody who they'd like to try to secure an audience with as soon as possible. And I do think he would listen. It's hard not to when you got Jerry Jones. You can be pretty persuasive, and you got that, you know, you got that star, and you've got that symbol, and, you know, a team that's on prime time, and we know America's team, all that stuff. You know, I think that's a guy who would be very attractive to them.
Jason, last thought, the Chargers, man, they find new and inventive ways to lose. But this is absolutely incredible how that went down yesterday. You and I talked about this when I was back in New York last, but what is your sense as to the future of Philip Rivers with the Chargers?
I think that, you know, they've already had internal discussions about what are we doing right now, and at some point, do we just try to win a game with Tyrod Taylor, because the highs won't be as high, but the lows won't be as low. And maybe it's a little more sustainable. Maybe it's a little more stable. And then, you know, look, this is, they're at a critical juncture in that franchise in a lot of different ways. And they're not just going to be playing in a soccer stadium off the side of the road anymore. They're moving into this football Taj Mahal. It's going to be the talk of the league. They're sharing it with a team with whom they don't really have a whole lot of natural connections to, and with whom their owners and business side people are not getting along. And I don't know who you market the Chargers around. I mean, Rivers has turned the ball over more than anybody in the league the last 4 years, not named Jameis Winston. He does not look like an ascending asset. He's going to cost 20-odd million, you know, a season, pushing 30 million a season. He's turning 38. He still lives in San Diego. You know, he's not a guy who I think you're going to see out and about in L.A. all the time, or, you know, at this, you know, meeting or that meeting, or you know, pushing the franchise. And they've been looking and evaluating other quarterbacks in the draft with an eye towards taking one high for several years now. They haven't done it yet. But, yes, I do think that somebody else will be their quarterback next year.
He is an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He appears every Sunday on the NFL Today. He is Jason Lockenfora, JLC. I will see you Sunday morning. Thanks so much.
Look forward to it, buddy. Thank you.
Today's episode of the Daily Jungle is brought to you by CBS Sports HQ, the brand new streaming sports news network. It's live 24/7, but it costs you nothing. That's right. It's sports coverage that's always on and always free. Always. CBS Sports HQ has coverage which is focused on the game. Tons of highlights, breaking news as it happens, fantasy advice, and something that we all care deeply about, gambling picks, analysis, which will enable you to get the extra edge. I know when I turn on CBS Sports HQ, I'm going to get the tips and the trends that I need to win my bets. And don't forget, you can get access to all this great intel completely free. I don't mean free for a week or a month, or you have some special cable package so you can get it that way. I mean, totally and completely free for everybody. You don't even need a login. Just download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Apple TV, Roku, Fire TV, or any other connected device at any time at all to watch CBS Sports HQ. No fake debates, just sports for real sports fans at the great price of nothing. You don't even have to log in or sign up for anything at all. Just download the CBS Sports app and watch CBS Sports HQ today. Why don't we start with old Nicholas? He took his Alabama team into Auburn without a chance to win the SEC, but with a chance to make a final claim for a spot in the playoff. Then they lose 48-45 to their rival in a truly excruciating way. How bad was it? Let's count the ways. There was the clock at the end of the first half that allowed Auburn a chance to kick a field goal.
Ledbetter to hold it. There's the snap. The kick is on the way by Carlson, and he made it!
As you might imagine, Saban handled that like an absolute champ. No, he didn't. He damn near lost his mind. Then there was the 100-yard pick six.
Tennyson in motion. They throw it. It is incomplete. No, it's intercepted. Intercepted down the sideline. Tigers. Zakobi McClain. He may go the distance. One man to beat. They're not going to get him. He's to the 20. 15. 10. 5. Touchdown, Auburn. Zakobi McClain goes the distance. Can you believe it?
IMG Sports Network. Then there was the chance for the game-tying field goal with 2 minutes left.
Bulldogs for the tie. Kick is on the way, and it hit the right, the upright. It's no good. He hit the left upright. Faces.
Doink! And then there was the fourth down play, where Gus Malzahn's crew completely fooled Nick Saban's.
It's fourth down and four. They're in a regular formation here with Nick's. Just going to try to draw them off sides, I guess. And they're saying that.
I think they had 12 men on the field. That's why they didn't jump off sides, but they lined up. And Alabama had 12 men out there.
Middle substitution. Defense, 12 players in the formation.
I don't know if I've ever seen a game ended with too many men on the field.
Man, can't you count? And as you'd expect, Saban handled that like an absolute legend. Actually, he did not handle that well either. He complained that it was, quote, unfair.
And we had a chance to get the ball back at the end of the game. I really feel that it was a pretty unfair play at the end of the game. They substituted a punter as a wide receiver. So we put the punt team in. And then when the quarterback was still in there, we tried to put the defense back in. I thought they should have given us a little more time to substitute and get Waddle out as a returner. We get called for 12 guys on the field. So that was very disappointing. We're responsible for that as coaches, but it was a very unusual circumstance, to say the least. And
wow, did the alleged greatest coach ever just throw that card? It's unfair. It's not fair. That's not fair. My guy, you lost a game where you gave up 48 points. You committed 13 penalties. Yes, your kicker missed a critical field goal, and your backup QB had a pair of painful picks. But your backup QB also had a total of 367 yards and four touchdowns. You see, back in the day, that would have been more than enough for a Nick Saban defense to win. But this was not a Nick Saban defense. It hasn't been a Nick Saban defense. And that was not an Alabama team that deserved to be in the playoff. And Saban's left losing his mind on the field, on the sideline, and then complaining in a press conference. And for the first time ever, you've got the ensuing questions such as, is Saban past his prime? Is the Alabama dynasty, in fact, dead? And I'm sure Saban will handle both those questions as well as he handled the others this past weekend. In other words, really badly. This guy's a sore winner and a sore loser. You know there's another guy like that? A guy who's a sore winner and a sore loser? Bill Belichick. No wonder those two do so well. And then there's Michigan. This was supposed to be the year. Year five, Jim Harbaugh's guys, his culture, his process, no more excuses. I mean, sure, they had been humiliated 62-39 by Ohio State last year, but this was the year. Jim Harbaugh had waited out Urban Meyer, and now he was going to get to face the kid, the new guy, Ryan Day, and he was going to do it in Ann Arbor. It was set up for him and his team. I mean, if Jim Harbaugh couldn't end the streak this year, when would he? The answer is probably never, because with all that going for them, the veteran against the first-year head coach, playing at home, the chance to break that streak, Michigan came out fired up. They knew what was at stake, and they were going to do anything and everything they could to get an edge, to get inside Ohio State's head, if need be, which is why a couple of dopes went Bush League and untied the shoe of Ohio State running back J.K. Dobbins after a play. Hey, look, I know Harbaugh likes to coach enthusiasm, but he sure as hell does not preach discipline, does he? Not if you're eating 15-yard flags for unsportsmanlike conduct in arguably the most critical game of your tenure. I mean, holy crap, what happened to the Michigan men? You know, this notion of the Michigan men being classy. I mean, if you can't win, at least be classy. And if you can't do either, then what are you exactly? You're a team that just got curb stomped by your rival again, this time 56-27 at home. Now, the good news is you didn't allow 62. The bad news is you gave up. And you gave up a big chunk, and you lost by 29 at home. So Harbaugh is now 0-5 against Ohio State. 0-5 in the only game that counts. 0-5 in a game that every Michigan coach ever gets measured by. 0-5 against the team that you were hired to beat. The team they pay you hellified jack to beat. And as you might imagine, unlike Saban, Harbaugh at least handled that embarrassing beatdown pretty well. Oh, no, he didn't.
Is this a talent gap? Is it a preparation gap? Is it a coaching gap? What is the biggest difference between you and Ohio State at this point?
I mean, I'll answer your questions, not your insults, so.
That wasn't an insult. I mean, you've been offered 18 points in 2 years.
They played really good. They played good.
100 yards. That's what I'm asking. What's the biggest difference in the gap between you guys?
They played better today.
Quote, I'll answer your questions, but not your insults.
I mean, I'll answer your questions, not your insults.
What an amazing line. You just got smashed again. Yeah, I'm sure the facts do feel like insults. But see, that's the thing. That's not an insult. You just lost your last two games to Ohio State by a combined score of 118-66. You gave up 118 points in the last two games to the most important opponent on your schedule. Saying Ohio State played better on that day is not good enough. You don't just play better and score 118 points in two games. It's way more than that. That's not just a bad day. That's not just a one-off. Yeah, I bet you do feel insulted. You should. The scoreboard is insulting. In fact, it's offensive. If it's not insulting and offensive to you, it is definitely insulting and offensive to Michigan fans because they got their faces caved in again, their teeth kicked in again, and there's no sign of this stopping. There is a huge gap between these two programs on every single level. Talent, preparation, coaching, execution, class, you name it. You're there to win that game. That's the most important aspect of your job, and you have it. So all that other stuff doesn't matter because this is the game that Michigan has been pointing to ever since Herb announced that he was leaving. They have been building towards this, and they got the same exact result. Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields has got a pretty good idea of exactly what happened.
I just think we take it more serious than they do. I think we prepare for it all year. Like Coach Mick said, we're preparing for the next year right now. So I think it just means more at Ohio State. So that's pretty much, I think, the bigger reason why we have more success than they do.
It just means more to us. We just prepare better than they do. He's right. Is there anything about what he said that's not true? And notice that I didn't use the word rival, because that's not a rivalry. A rivalry is a battle between equals. What this is an annual game between two teams in the same conference. They're not equals. Michigan has lost 8 straight. In the last few years, Purdue and Iowa have more wins over Ohio State than Michigan does. Let that sink in for a minute. There's no rivalry here. We are joined by Bob Myers. Bob, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
Good, good. In fact, let me rephrase the question, Bob. Before we talk basketball, how is life right now?
Good, man. Get the 3 girls. I don't know how your house is, but it's I got a good balance in life. I got all testosterone at work, and then at home it's a bunch of estrogen, and it works out good. It's my kids are, I don't know how you raise kids properly. I'm still figuring that out, but it's in a climate where sports matter so much. I go to work, and it's kind of, we all think, whether you're working for any organization and you interview all kinds of people from sports, we think the world revolves around us, and then it's nice to go home and realize it really doesn't. So it's good, man. How about you? How you doing?
Same thing, Bob. Exactly. You go home and you realize what's really important and what matters, and it's not necessarily what we do. The difference for us, Bob, we dropped our older son, Jake, off at the University of Wisconsin. So he went away to college this fall, came back for the holidays, so that was kind of a blast. But you're right. You come home, and you know exactly what does matter. Let me ask you this. On that same topic, last November, after a loss to San Antonio, Steve Kerr made the point, and I quote, "We've had such a charmed existence the last 4 seasons. This is the toughest stretch we've been in. This is the real NBA. We haven't been in the real NBA the last few years. We've been in this dream," end quote. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, you know, but the dream, yeah, I think maybe for me the dream wasn't all perfect. When you're in it, it's great. And I think there's a lot of truth to what he said. Winning and winning at the level we won at does still require it requires a lot, man. It's not like you're just watching it happen. May be hard for listeners to understand, but there's almost more pressure when your only acceptable outcome is winning a championship. There's some weight to that. It's not bad. It's good. It's what you want to carry. It's the expectations you want. But I always look at it like running a marathon. I don't know if you're supposed to run 5 in a row back to back to back to back to back, but we did, and you're happy about it, and you do it while you can. But yeah, I mean, this is more now. I don't know. No, this is the real NBA, because I can't say this without people hearing it as if it's an excuse, and I don't want it to be heard that way, because I'm happy to own whatever challenges we go through. But the injuries are a little unusual. The amount of them and the players that actually have gotten hurt. But again, in this industry, in this nature, that sounds weak. That sounds like an excuse. I'm really not trying to say it that way. It's just a fact. It's reality. It just as if you'd say we've had good health, but we've had bad health. So yeah, man, you move through it. I'm lucky to have Steve as a partner in all this. For him, he's never lost. So I think even for him, it's tougher. I didn't win at the level of my life that Steve Kerr did. I mean, he played 15 years, I think, in the league and had 1 year where he lost, where he didn't go to the playoffs, I believe, which is kind of crazy. And then he was the GM of the Suns, and they did well. And then he came on board with us and went to five finals in a row. So, I mean, Kerr for sure. I've lost more in my life. But, no, I mean, it's more reality than going to the finals 5 years in a row, is that's for sure.
Bob Meyer is joining us. You know, obviously, Bob, and I thought you did a great job of laying out exactly what that's like. You don't want the run to end, but is there something reinvigorating about a new challenge?
Yeah. I mean, we haven't been involved at the trade deadline for 5 years, or we've been in free agency. But, yeah, I mean, I look at it like, let me give you a I don't know if this is a good example or not, but when I took this job, people said, you know, what's the difference between this and being an agent? And I said, well, an agent, you got these one-off transactions, and it's fun. You're trying to build a client base and get a good group of guys, get them paid, and get as many good players as you can. This job is like a puzzle, and you're trying to put it together. And when I showed up, the puzzle was mostly not done. And with the group, with help from my group and our owner and everybody that was involved, we put a puzzle together. And Steve was a huge part of that, and our players certainly were the biggest part. And then for the last 3 years, if I'm being honest, I would just walk by the cardboard table and look at that puzzle and, hey, it looks pretty good, and just kind of keep going. Now, that's fine when you have a completed thing. It's not often you get that in this business, in any sport, where you look at the roster and go, I don't know if we should do much. But, you know, I don't know the right word to use to describe it, but you do just kind of get used to that, and you're not doing much with it. You're staring at it. It looks good. And then what happened in the finals and also in the offseason and in the beginning of this season with injuries, you know, it's like my one-and-a-half-year-old came over and just kind of knocked it off on the ground.
So right.
You're staring at it, and you're kind of like, okay, let's put it back together. So, yes, it's the same way. I mean, dumping out a new puzzle over the holidays and going, all right, who wants to do this with me? And the best part is you get your group together, you look at it and go, where's our corner pieces, what fits, what doesn't, and yes, that's invigorating in some sense, but also losing sucks too. So it's all connected.
Yeah, but in terms of the analogy, how about this? I can remember back in the day I had a beautiful laptop. Man, I love that laptop. It was so nice. I knew if I turned it on, it would work. It would do what it was supposed to do until my then 2 or 3 year old came over to the same laptop and started pulling all the keys off it. And that didn't work so well. And then that became something different. All right, so part of the puzzle, yeah. There's also the new building. You've got a new building, and legend has it you were fired up about the potential of a new cookie room in the Chase Center. How do you like that new building so far, and what's it say about the vision of the organization?
Oh, the building's fantastic. I mean, it's really good. And again, you know, people listening will say, I have to say that it's just true. And for people, anybody that's listening that has been, and you got to come check it out, Jim, whenever you want. But bring your son, bring your college son. But it's a really nice building. They did a really good job. It's got everything you want. The only thing it doesn't have is any memories. So it's just like a home. I mean, you have to have some memories in it. Your kid has to bang his head against the counter, and you have to get some stitches, and you have to have some holidays, got to have some birthdays. We have no memories. We've moved into this place, and it's beautiful, and I wouldn't change any of it. And for me, just walking over from my office to the games is huge. The players, we have one locker room. Depends on what you value in life, but it's got what you want. It really does. And the location is probably my favorite part, just a building in San Francisco, a world-class, world-renowned city. They really did a wonderful job. The owners, there was no expenses spared. But again, it's not Oracle yet because we haven't poured sweat into it. We haven't had a playoff game in it. To be honest, we haven't won that much in it yet. And so that's what makes a building unique. I mean, you probably went to the Forum growing up. And then when the Lakers moved into Staples, and I was there too, I went to game, you know, and then I was living in L.A. and I'd go to Staples. It takes time to build what matters. You know, the old Boston Garden, those places were special because of the memories within them. They weren't necessarily the buildings. So you have to create new ones, and that's what we're working on.
That's a great analogy as well. Bob Myers joining us. So, Bob, you along with Steve Kerr and a number of players as well as members of the organization are going to head to East Lansing tomorrow night for the retirement of Draymond's Michigan State jersey. Draymond always talks about the relationship the two of you have. How would you describe that and what he means to you and to that organization?
Oh, you know, he's you've talked to Draymond. The thing I like most about Draymond is that he's flawed, and that may not sound like a compliment, but he's real, and it's hard to connect with people in this business. You know, people you work with in sports it's very egocentric. We get caught up in what is about us, and we, you know, even some of our players, they'll ask me a question, but hey, how's it going, or how's your family? And I'll commend them. I'll say, great, good job. And they'll say, what? I said, you're asking questions. You know, it's kind of like they have to work, because so much revolves around them and they're always the center of attention. It's hard for them, and I don't want to be too general, but you got to be a human being too. And so the thing I like most about Draymond is, because we've been through a lot of good and some challenges, he's honest and he's kind of open. He'll say, yeah, I screwed up, and he'll listen. And he's not super defensive when he makes mistakes. And so through all of the last 8 or 9 years, it's gotten to the point where we kind of know each other. But it takes years, man. I mean, it takes a long time. Everybody thinks, you know, we'll sign a player and they'll say, you know, have you gotten to know him yet? And I'll say, it's only been 2-3 months. And it takes time. And so, like I said, with the arena, with Draymond, it takes time. But to see him honored at Michigan State, it's well-deserved, and he's a great reflection of what matters and was a great college player. Obviously, he's a great pro. But it's hard. In this bit, like yours, Jim, you probably worked with a lot of people over the years. And we talk about, this guy's my friend, and I'll stay connected. But really, the truth is, sadly, we don't. But there's a few people you do. They come in town, and you make an effort to go to dinner with them. Draymond's a guy, 20 years from now, I'll go out of my way. Just because the guy's an interesting guy. He's just, he's got a way, he's got a charisma about him. Some people don't like him, but if they knew him, if they really knew him, I think they would. And so I'm honored to go and watch him get that jersey retired.
No, I think you're right, Bob. I think that is one of those guys that years down the road, you still stay connected. And it seems to me that you're in the middle of this 5-game road trip. The fact that so many people are going to make the trip to see that happened for him, it speaks to exactly how people feel about him within the organization. Look, there's no denying that the season is challenging from a results standpoint, but at the same time, when you look at the fact that you're missing a pair of Hall of Famers who are injured right now, you're hitting the road scouting for the draft. If the roster is healthy and you know you can make some moves, how quickly can this thing turn back around?
I mean, it could be next year. I mean, it could be at the end. I don't know. We'll see. But it's there. I mean, the pieces are there. We have to see it. But you know, unfortunately, we haven't seen the true, even Clay being out and Steph being out as long as he has. It's hard to really know, but I believe in those. Obviously, they've proven they can win and play together. But we have to now reestablish a new continuity, a new chemistry, and that takes a little time. But I'm confident, you know, it won't be what we can do next year. I'll be excited to see. But I do know this. What we will be, and I think I speak for everybody, most importantly the players, there'll be a new – I was sitting next last year at a regular season game, and a GM of the other team came and sat with me. We were watching the game, and at the end of the game, we were going to win the game. We were up 10 with about 30 seconds to go, and he taps me on the shoulder. He puts his hand out and says, hey, congratulations, and to shake my hand. And I looked at him and I said, for what? And he said, you're going to win the game. And I said, oh, yeah, yeah, thanks. That's not a made-up story. I did not know what he was talking about when he congratulated me. I promise you next year, Jim, when we were in regular season game, it's going to mean something. And that's just what it is. It's hard not to get – I don't want to say complacent. I don't know if entitled, but you do lose a little bit of appreciation when – I think last year, if you looked at the last 3 years at least, I bet we weren't favored in 8-9 games out of 100 and 200 games. To be honest, I mean, we weren't supposed to win 10 of them. And so you do get a little bit – that's not reality when Steve talks about reality. So from a player standpoint, the regular season, and any win will be appreciated more. I think it will be fought for more. But I'm excited for it, too. I'm excited to see what we can do.
No, I think that's true, Bob. And I think that when you have that success after everything you've been through, everything you're going through right now, it's going to be different. I mean, that's not to say that you didn't appreciate it when you were in it, but how could you not appreciate it more when you see what you have to go through and the perspective you have? Really quickly, before you go, I mentioned off the top that you were recently inducted into the Monta Vista High School Athletic Hall of Fame. I know you're going to be modest. I know you'll downplay your accomplishments, but what were those days like for you?
I'm not going to be I'm just going to be truthful, Jim. I stood up, and the people that – it was the first Hall of Fame induction, and the people that were inducted were really accomplished people. I mean, there were some people that had done a lot at Monta Vista and beyond. There's a world-class women's water polo player who's probably the best in the world. And there were some high-level people that went on to do some really exciting things. So when I stood up, I did feel like this was some kind of charitable deal. I had a couple of buddies text me from my high school team and said, I was better than you. And I know. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. But, no, it's, you know, I guess if I was going to validate it, I'd say I'm the guy that got inducted, I suppose, because of just effort and hard work and, not the most talented, but I do think I represent the high school in a way where, you know, you keep working, you do try to stay humble, and, we should honor people like that. I mean, you know, there's people like that that should be honored. But again, in the real Hall of Fames, it is mostly about talent, which is fine. It's just fine. But it was a fun night. I was there with my family and my wife's family. And you don't give that. You take those things, Jim. I don't know if you're in the Hall of Fame. But you just take what you can get at this point. You just appreciate it.
Oh, no, I get that, Bob. Recently, for some reason, and I'm like you, I'm not sure exactly how it happened, but they put me into the Radio Hall of Fame. And at this point, you take those things, and you appreciate those things. And I think you're right. I think it's not about talent, but it's about hard work and dedication. And it worked out. He is a recent inductee into the Monta Vista High School Athletic Hall of Fame. I'm going to start right there. He's a two-time NBA Executive of the Year, led the Warriors to those three NBA titles and five straight conference titles. Golden State back at it tonight at Atlanta. Bob Myers, very good friend of the program. Bob, I appreciate you so much. Great to have you back. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Hey, come to a I know we're not winning a lot, but come check out the new arena.
So you know your genes are not just about you. It's something that you share with the people closest to you. Uncovering potential health issues early on can help empower you with the information so you and your family can move forward to a healthier future if there is an issue. Which brings me to Ancestry Health. With Ancestry Health, you can discover how your DNA might influence certain health conditions and the steps that you can take with a healthcare provider to chart a healthier path forward if need be. What I'm saying is this: some health conditions can be influenced by genetics. Ancestry Health looks at a carefully selected set and then gives you insights about how they could impact you and your family. Ancestry Health gives you personalized health reports that are easy to understand with actionable insights and access to genetic counseling resources and a family health history tool to track generations of health. And of course, you'll receive their great Ancestry DNA ethnicity results that reveal your origins as well. So learn from your genes and take action for your family. Go to Ancestry.com/Rome and learn more and get your Ancestry Health kit today. Ancestry.com/Rome. Ancestry Health includes laboratory tests developed and performed by an independent CLIA certified lab partner and with oversight from an independent clinician network of board certified physicians and genetic counselors. Ancestry Health is not
Patriots
currently available
and
in New York,
Texans
New Jersey,
last night,
or Rhode Island. I started this thought, and let me finish it. So when the Texans showed up, their linebackers showed up for that game against Indianapolis dressed as Mortal Kombat characters, I thought that was pretty cool. And even cooler when they went out and they won. But Texan fans, you had to be a little concerned, if not panicked, when you saw the linebackers show up last night dressed as a SWAT team. It's one thing to break out the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle costumes for Carolina, but New England is a different deal altogether. And when they rolled in wearing tactical vests, you knew Texan fans were getting horrible flashbacks to that Letterman jacket fiasco of 2012. Remember that? You can't tell me also that that type of thing does not matter, or that it shouldn't matter, or that it doesn't matter, because it does. As an example, ask the Steelers players how they felt about Freddie Kitchens rocking a Pittsburgh started at T. In fact, you don't even have to ask those guys. They were more than happy to let you know. They were more than happy to bring it up themselves. These inevitably things always come back to bite those who are foolish enough to do it. I mean, again, it shouldn't matter, but it does. Believe me when I tell you that. These are professional athletes we're talking about. They will look for any slight, real or imagined, to pump into their tanks as fuel. So yes, the Texans showing up dressed as a SWAT team figured to come back to bite them in the back. Except it didn't, because the Texans manhandled the Patriots. Straight domination last night. Don't let that final score confuse you. Don't let it fool you. 28-22. Man, that's cosmetic. That was a comprehensive beatdown, starting with this INT by Bradley Roby.
He throws back to the left. It's picked off. Roby across the 20-15, and he's down inside the 6-yard line. Bradley Roby, welcome back to the lineup in a big, big way.
Texans radio. Somehow that matador tackling job by Tom Brady. Brady making that business decision and going all matador. Somehow that was still enough to bring Roby down. But that was quickly chased by this.
Shotgun snap on 3rd and 3. Watson rolls right, throws it right. Duke Johnson open at the 5, and he'll hold the ball high over his head as he walks in for the touchdown.
You know, the thing is, that type of thing will happen. Mistakes will be made. You can chalk that TD up to a mistake. But the next time Houston got the ball, they went on a 13-play, 88-yard drive that ate up nearly 7 minutes and was capped off by this.
Some of them still feeling the effects of the flu. 2nd down and 1. Watson play action. Floats it to the tight end. Darren Fells at the 5, and Fells will walk in untouched for a touchdown.
Westwood 1. Darren Fells, if I'm not mistaken, UC Irvine. And they don't have a football team. Darren Fells. So that made it 14-3, Houston. Nothing fluky about that. They weren't playing on a short field after a turnover. They went the length of the field on the Hood's alleged historic defense. And then in the third quarter, they made it 21-3 when they did this.
Watson will step up. Watson throwing deep down the left side. Kenny Stills in the end zone. He's got it. This is a catch. This is a touchdown. Kenny Stills, his 2nd touchdown as a Texan.
And the amazing thing about that was that TD pass came one play after Deshaun Watson placed another pass in nearly the same exact spot, but was ruled an incompletion. So then with time starting to go against them, New England goes on a 12-play, 75-yard drive that took 5.5 minutes off the clock and made it 21-9. And then they got really weird with whatever the hell they were trying to do on that point after. They lined up to go for 2, then they didn't go for 2. Then they took a delay of game, and then they missed the extra point. Nice work. After putting on floppy shoes and a red nose during that extra point, New England got fully clowned on this play.
Out of the gun, the gift to Johnson, who gives it back to DeAndre Hopkins, who pitches it to Deshaun Watson, running down the sidelines and running in for the touchdown. Oh my goodness, DeAndre Hopkins with the option pitch to Deshaun Watson and a touchdown for the Texans. Some razzle dazzle.
That was amazing. Watching that, I thought to myself, that's incredible. Whatever the hell that was. That was some big 8 wing T formation stuff. Like Bill O'Brien, dude. Exactly where did that come from?
Yeah, I think they drew that one up in the dirt over the bye week, and they brought it in, and they had it on a piece of notebook paper, and they handed it to me. You know, we've been working on that for a while, and, you know, it was all about the timing, you know, where we could get the ball so we could run a play like that. And, you know, the timing was right. We got the ball down there in the 6-yard line, and that was where we wanted to do it, and we did it, and they executed pretty well. It wasn't the exact look we thought we were going to get, and they made it work.
They sure as hell did make that work. In fact, bring me more of that. I mean, understandably, it's dangerous. Dangerous as hell to have DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson placed in harm's way on the same play. Imagine getting both those guys knocked out on a play like that. But it worked. It's definitely juicy. It worked. Even if Hopkins had to take a hit to make that play.
I would give myself a 10 or 11 maybe because I took a hit, you know, just to get it to him. But no, they played it. They played it very well. He was patient. So I knew I had to kind of tuck the ball and, you know, wait for him to commit to throw it to Deshaun. And I knew once I threw it to him that, you know, he was going to be in. It wasn't a guy flipping me at practice, that's for sure. So it was a lot clearer than it was today. But I knew holding on to the ball and getting the guy to commit that, you know, it would lead to Deshaun being open. And I knew all I had to do was give him the ball.
And he did. I love that take, too. Like, 1 to 10, yeah, I'd give myself a 50. I took a pretty good shot now. See the way I hung in there on that flip? He's right. At that point, Houston was just toying with New England. Toying with New England. And even though the Patriots scored a pair of meaningless TDs in the final 4 minutes, that game was over. And of course, everybody is going to come in and bury the Pats today. Like, where does that leave them? Because that's what everybody loves to do. They're going to point out that the Patriots receivers could not get separation against a secondary that has been patched together. That as soon as Julian Edelman was double covered, New England's passing game ended. And that the only time guys were getting open was when Houston had a breakdown or thought the game was over. It just got soft at the end. Or that New England's defense didn't look so dominant against Houston's offense and that they got outsmarted, out-executed. You watch that game and you can see why the Pats were so desperate, so thirsty, so desperate to get Gronk to come back. And why they disgraced themselves by bringing in Antonio Brown. And then the speculation started again that there might be a reunion. And maybe they could bring the guy back. You watch that game and you're ready to end the Pats dynasty right then and there. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. I'm not saying they don't have concerns because they do. But every time you throw dirt on these guys, they come back from the dead. They rip that shovel right out of your hands and they go upside your head with it. That's how it works. That doesn't mean they're going to win the Super Bowl. That doesn't mean they're the team to beat right now. I'm just saying, declaring them dead when they're 10-2 and their only losses have come at the hands of Baltimore and Houston is pretty stupid. I wouldn't do that. I'm not going to blame this all on them being sick or guarantee that they're going to get it turned around, but I would hold off on writing that obit for the dynasty. And yes, Brady and that passing game look pretty weak right now and have for a while, maybe worse than ever before. But I have said before and I'll say it again right now, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are done when they say they're done. But one more thing about Belichick, and we touched on it. This is also not news. This dude's a bad loser. Belichick is a sore loser. He really is. You see that blow-by handshake of Bill O'Brien? It's embarrassing. Especially since it's a branch from your own tree, Hood. Like, I get that most of your assistants never amount to anything as head coaches, so you never really have to do this or deal with this, that those assistants who don't amount to anything as head coaches never come back to beat you. But O'Brien did, and it was the first time in six tries. Grow up, man. Grow up, man up, look him in the eye, say nice job. Especially to a guy who used to work for you. It's not that hard. Not nearly as hard as you're making it out to be. You lost a game in December. You're 10-2. It's not the end of the world. Man, class it up. Man up and shake the hand of the guy who just beat you. That's how that's done. Like, in every other game. I mean, I don't even care what tension there might have been between Belichick and O'Brien over some of the front office stuff in the offseason. Just be the bigger man. Congratulate the guy who just beat you in prime time. And, of course, his post-game presser was awkward as hell, as you would expect. Just as nobody should be freaking out over one Patriots loss, Bill Belichick should not be sulking like a baby after one Patriots loss. I mean, get it together, man. You're 10-2. You got outclassed. You got outplayed. So your offense doesn't look so good, and your defense had a bad night. Get over it. So your offense has looked anemic for a while, and your defense isn't the 85 Bears. Get over that, too. Losing happens. You don't have to have a tantrum when it happens just to show us how much you hate losing. We get it. You don't like losing. Nobody does. But just about everybody else handles it like a pro and not a troll. That blow-by handshake was bad. Just stop and look the guy in the eye and say, mumble, mumble, nice job. Well done. See you next time. Yeah, mount that front office stuff. Mumble, mumble. You guys look pretty good tonight. You had some help from us, though. Don't forget there, Billy boy. Yeah, one out of six, huh? Yeah. Yeah, hey, let me tell you something, Bill. If we had Antonio Brown, I'd be a real different deal. You know that, right? You know that, right, Bill? And don't even get me started on Gronk. And don't buy that stuff there, old man. Gronk might come back. You wait and see. All right, nice win. Good job. Hey, how about my kid? How do you like his haircut? He's got more hair than you. Just look the guy in the eye and say, nice job. Nice job. Congrats. And then go. And then you're done. And then I don't have to waste any time on it. And I don't have to break out my bad Belichick imitation. Yeah. And trust me. Trust me when I tell you we're still a team to beat, all right? How many times are people trying to throw dirt on us? Yeah? Yeah, you tell me you'd rather have Deshaun Watson than Tom Brady? Yeah, I don't think so. I didn't think so. How many rings I got there? Why do you think you have that job? Because of me. All right? Me. If anybody should be congratulating anybody, you should be congratulating me for the life I've had. How about that? If they didn't have football life on you, that's what I thought. Nah, mumble. 1-800-636-8686. Hey, you think you got a problem, huh? Look at my kid. Look at that hair on that kid. I've been telling him get a bleeping haircut. He's going to be on TV more and more, especially if we can't stop anybody. Yeah, that's what I thought. You're not still waiting for a congratulations, are you? You know better than that. You think Bill Parcells ever congratulated me? You think Bill Parcells ever said attaboy to me? Nah, I didn't think so. Get out of here, man. Get back to your locker room. Be better, Hood. You got to do better than that. I'm not saying you got to hug it out. I'm not saying you got to hug it out with the guy. Just look him in the eye and say, well done. Congrats. See you next time. We're on to whoever we have next. Yeah, I wish we were. Seattle, yeah. And then again, you see what Cincinnati just did to, who did they just beat again? Oh, yeah, they beat the Jets, that's right. Yeah. What are the Jets in the standing? Man, everything's all jacked up. Micah Hyde is my guest. Micah, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you doing, bud?
Good. So take me back to Thanksgiving first. I get that every single game is significant, but does it feel a little bit different when it's Dallas against the Cowboys on Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I think the Thanksgiving game is obviously pretty exciting itself, but I'm too thinking in Dallas, you know, it's always fun to play there, and, you know, the luxury crowds into it. Obviously, a very good opponent, so we did get out there with the win.
Micah Hyde joining us. So Dallas went on a 75-yard TD drive to start that game, and then you and the defense absolutely locked them up for the next three quarters. What changed, and how pleased were you with the way the defense locked in the way it did?
I think just in a few games, the open drive hasn't really gone our way, but, you know, I got to give credit to our coaching staff and the players just flushing it, getting back to the sideline, making adjustments, going out there and just playing our brand of football. Nobody got too worked up. No one got, down, and we just want to go out there and compete and do the rest of the game.
Bill, safety, Micah Hyde's my guest. And after you beat Miami in Week 11, you were praising Josh Allen, and you made the point that he could be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Then he goes out against Dallas on national TV. He accounts for 274 yards, had a couple of touchdowns, a passer rating of over 120. What did you make of his performance in that game?
You know, that's our quarterback, man. We love him. Out there and competes every day, whether it's practice or something in a football game. So, we ride or die with him, and it's awesome to see him go out there and, like you said, national TV on Thanksgiving, huge game, and just be himself. He's not trying to be anybody else. You know, we know what type of football player he is. He understands what type of football player he is, and that's why we love him. And it's good to see him go out there and compete and have fun.
Bill, safety, Micah Hyde is my guest. Going into the game, Mike, as you pointed out, almost everybody picked against you guys. Then you go out, mm-hmm. You dominate on the road. Did it feel like a statement win to you?
That's kind of a common theme this year of people picking against us. But at the end of the day, we don't really buy into that statement stuff. We just go out there and play our brand of football, like I said, control what we can control. And that was, that's why I think that we play so well on the road. It's just we go there and fearless and that all week, and that's what we did.
Well, so you mentioned that brand of football a couple of times. How would you describe the attitude and the identity of this Bills team? Exactly what is that brand?
It's the kind of the same brand of the city of Buffalo. It's not It's not always pretty, but at the end of the day, you know, we're going to go out there, we're going to work hard, we're going to put our hard hats on, we're going to compete, and, you know, it's going to come down to the end of the game, and I think it comes down to, you know, how well our fundamentals are, how well we are at situational football, and, you know, like I said, that's the city of Buffalo. You know, people wake up every morning, go to work, don't complain, and, you know, that's how we try to approach each and every game.
Michael Hyde, my guest. You know, you made another point, too, about Sean McDermott and what he's got in that locker room. A bunch of guys who've been maybe overlooked, guys who are hungry, guys who want to compete, guys who want to help the team win. That's actually a quote from you. So what's it like to play for him, and then how valuable is it to have a locker room full of guys who've got chips on their shoulders, who do have something to prove?
Yeah, I think, you know, playing for him is awesome. You know, he's a go-getter. He wakes up every morning, and he wants to compete. And a lot of guys in the locker room are like that. You know, I mentioned in a few interviews, you know, a lot of guys have been on former teams where they've been overlooked. You know, there's a lot of guys on locker room that didn't get drafted where they want to get drafted. There's a lot of coaches that have been fired from former teams. And it, you know, it starts up top. You know, a lot of guys have been overlooked and have that chip on their shoulder. You know, it's amazing to see a lot of these guys, you know, come together and just, you know, fight for one common goal, and that's win football games and try to change this, you know, culture in Buffalo. And you know, that's why you see, you know, back in 2017 when Sean McDermott got here, he's continued to do that, and, you know, it's been a process. You know, we record last year didn't really indicate what was going on in the building, but I think, you know, this year we're kind of moving in the right direction, and we're going to continue to work, and, you know, another one starts on Sunday against Baltimore.
We're talking to Micah Hyde for a few more moments. We're talking Bills football. So in terms of that culture change, when you arrived in 2017, the team had not been to the playoffs since the 99 season. You go your first year, and now you're 9-3. You're playing huge games in December. So what's been the biggest change from when you first arrived to now? How has that culture changed?
Well, like I said, I think it started with Sean. He's preached, you know, just high-character guys, you know, being in the locker room, and you know, just guys you want to be around each and every day. And I think the second thing is family. You know, he's made an open locker room. You know, you see, you know, kids every day in the locker room, you know, with their dads just running around, whether it's in the indoor or whatnot, or, you know, wives. And, you know, he's literally made it an open locker room for people to come just be a family. And I think that's kind of, you know, correlated to our locker room, just everybody, you know, knowing each other, knowing each other's families, you know, just loving to be around each other.
Micah Hyde, my guest. Now, your name's getting a lot of run for the Pro Bowl. I know you're focused on winning games, but what does it mean to you to get that kind of respect, and what would it mean to you to go back to the Pro Bowl?
You know, obviously it's amazing. It's, you know, the hard work that I've been putting in, but there's a lot of guys on this defense and on this team and, you know, offense that should be a part of it. You know, I mentioned before when I went to the Pro Bowl, you know, guys like Tre'Davious White should prefer to be there. He's playing left outside against, you know, the team's number one. Open receivers each and every week. Somebody that I play alongside, Jordan Porter, that, you know, has been playing lights out also for the past, you know, 3 years alongside, you know, since we got here in 2017. So, you know, it's good to see, you know, our names being, you know, brought up. And, you know, I guess I can't mention how excited I am without mentioning those two guys also.
Micah Hyde, my guest. One last thought. You're now 9-3. You've got Baltimore coming to town Sunday. Another huge, huge game. When you think about facing Lamar Jackson, what is the key to stopping him in your mind, or at least slowing him down?
I think it's just containing him, to be honest. And we're going to get in this week and watch a lot of film, and we're going to what we can do is try to limit him on a lot of plays. Obviously, you see a lot of teams, a lot of defenses not being able to stop him. You know, I don't think anybody has the secret to stopping Lamar Jackson. We understand that he's a great player, probably going to be the MVP of the league this year. And we're going to go out there and try to contain him, maybe keep him off the field and see what we can do.
Rex in the ABQ. Hello, Rex.
Hey, Jimmy. You know, the hoodie isn't bent because they lost. He's upset that his idiot son is down there on the sideline eating a cocktail of shrooms, Xanax, and a missing chromosome.
Right. That's not a good call. No.
Good night now!